Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. One of the ways that the Jews and multiracialists got South Africans to surrender their independence and freedom and abandon their apartheid system of racial separation was through sports. Because so many otherwise sane South Africans were fiercely loyal to their cricket, rugby, soccer, and other teams, and because much of the world was boycotting South African teams so they could not compete on a worldwide basis, the Jews had the sports-minded South Africans in a classic carrot-and-stick situation. The Jews and their Gentile collaborators were saying, in essence, abolish apartheid and allow the races to mix freely in your country, and we'll let your team play in the World Cup competition like it used to do. Keep apartheid and fail to vote in the new constitution, and we'll make the boycott even stronger. You'll be totally isolated. The boycott of their sports teams was a major issue in the South African press for years, and it loomed large in the minds of those white South Africans who pulled the lever and basically gave away their country and their children's future by voting for one-party black rule under Nelson Mandela. Another and even more significant way that white South Africans were persuaded to sign away their self-determination was through their church. The dominant church among the Afrikaners who form the majority of white South Africans is the Dutch Reformed Church. The Afrikaners are a pious people, and much of their identity is and was wrapped up in their church, the doctrines of which are closely related to Calvinism. The Dutch Reformed ministers inspired the pioneering South Africans of 300 years ago with verses from the Old Testament, relating their struggles in a new land with the struggles of the ancient Hebrews in the deserts of the Middle East more than 20 centuries earlier. The Afrikaners were encouraged to see themselves as similar to the Jews, a chosen people, specially blessed by God and bringing godly ways to a new and hostile land. The Afrikaners' great trek was seen as their exodus into a promised land, and the parallel with the ancient Hebrews was a major part of their national identity. When they fought against British rule and the British Empire's idea of integrating blacks into their society, they didn't base their fight on scientific or even practical ideas about race. No, they based it on loyalty to Calvinist doctrine, on the way of life that had, in their view, sprung from those doctrines, and on the ungodly Enlightenment ideas, the worship of supposed reason instead of God, followed by their British adversaries. So when the apartheid policies of racial separation and self-determination were established in South Africa, they were justified in large part by Scripture. It wasn't so much that the races should develop separately or our precious genetic heritage will be wiped out, but rather that the races should develop separately because that is what Jehovah commands in his holy book. And Jehovah's holy book brought us safely to this land, and we must follow its teachings. But anyone who looks at the multiplicity of Christian sects can see that there are hundreds, even thousands, of different and mutually exclusive teachings supposedly based on those same scriptures. And it's almost as easy to see how Christian teachings change over time. Some of the very same churches that inspired Europeans to fight to keep Islam out of Europe now teach us that we must welcome Islamic invaders. Many of the same churches that once rejected homosexual perversion and called it a sin now say it's a sin not to support homosexual marriage, for but two examples. So it's not surprising that after several decades of the world's richest ethnic group working to undermine apartheid, and after getting all the mainline churches in their corner, and even getting the World Council of Churches to kick out the Dutch Reformed Church for its supposed racism, It's not surprising that new clerics eventually came to power in that church, clerics who suddenly discovered that Jesus and Yahweh actually meant exactly the opposite from what the church had said they meant yesterday. In 1992, 2 years before the referendum on the new constitution, the South African church issued an edict calling apartheid, which the church had been instrumental in creating in 1948, a sin. And since the loyalty of the Afrikaners was more to their church than to their race, since their very identity itself was more bound up in their religion than in their blood, a large number of them voted as their church evidently wanted them to vote, and so the whites handed over total power to the black communists of the ANC. There were other factors, too, including the total corruption of the major white political party in South Africa, the National Party, but these two examples are enough to illustrate my point. The South African people's loyalty to their sports teams and their loyalty to their church were enough to tip the scales in favor of political and racial suicide in that sad country. And sad it is, too. Since the imposition of black rule in South Africa, the country has rapidly descended into chaos, filth, disease, madness, tyranny, and genocide. South Africa is the AIDS capital of the world, with over 17% of the adult population being infected. But its then-president, Thabo Mbeki, claimed in 2000 that AIDS is not caused by HIV, and hundreds of thousands died as a result. South Africa is the rape capital of the world. 1 in 4 men admitted raping someone, half of them admitting they'd raped more than one person, and 1 in 3 South African women said they'd been raped in the past year. And the new South African government turns a blind eye as roving gangs of blacks murder white farmers by the thousands. South Africa, under white rule, was a first-world nation, outstanding in science, medicine, and technology. South Africa today is a third-world hellhole. If the white South Africans had been loyal to their people first, loyal to themselves, their families, their nation, and their race, this could never have happened. When the Jews and their collaborators tried to use sports and new interpretations of scripture to get them to hand over total political power to the blacks, they would have said, "Hell no! We won't sign over our right to rule ourselves to the black majority or to anyone. Having our own government and our own territory is absolutely essential for our survival. Being ruled by blacks is a death warrant for our sons and daughters, and anyone who wants to kill our sons and daughters is our enemy and will be treated as such." They wouldn't have cared much about whether or not their soccer team could play in London or Los Angeles, or whether some minister said it was a sin to do whatever it took to survive as a race. They would have booted the suicidal preacher out of their church as unfit to lead and apt to mislead those in his charge. And they would have laughed in the face of anyone who tried to use a sports boycott to get them to commit national suicide. They would have just organized their own championship games and kept on developing advanced weapon systems just in case the group behind the boycotters decided to attack them when the boycotts didn't work. That's what a sane people, with their natural, healthy loyalties intact, would have done. But it's not what the white people of South Africa actually did. For the honor and glory of their cricket team, and because someone wearing a clerical collar told them so, they gave up the political power they absolutely needed for survival, and condemned their children to murder, rape, disease, and life as a hated and dwindling minority. Now, it's easy to dismiss people who would trade their freedom for their sports team's success, but don't we white Americans display the same kind of misguided loyalty? Haven't millions of us given our loyalty to a sports team? Don't we put the team's symbols on our cars, on our clothing, sometimes even on our homes themselves to show our loyalty? Don't we spend many days every year watching the games? Don't we rearrange our lives so we don't miss the playoffs or the big game? Isn't this almost as much loyalty as we show to our own family members? And we do this even though we know that our home team is nothing but a corporation with hired gun players who have no connection with our hometown, even though we know that these hired guns are often blacks or other non-whites whose degenerate lifestyle often includes sexual defilement of white women. What a disgusting display. We humans are social creatures. We naturally crave belonging to a group, and our healthy instinct is to give our loyalty to that group. That group would naturally be our tribe, our race, our nation. But we have been raised wrong. We have been misled into transferring our loyalty to an artificial creation, like a sports franchise. And you'd better believe that the integration of sports wasn't so much about supposed fairness as it was about transferring our home team loyalty to a gang of non-whites. If you and your family always loved the Steelers or whatever, then if you wanted to keep up that traditional loyalty, you had to love the Africans, who comprised a large part of the team now, too. That's what it was all about, and it worked on us just like it worked on the South Africans. The only difference is that we had a white majority in America back then, so civil rights and multiracial democracy have been slower in bringing America to the third world level than they have in South Africa. But the same tribe that pushed integration and civil rights was busy opening the borders, and now they've managed to darken America to the point that a majority of births in this country are non-white now. It won't be long, just one or two generations perhaps, and America will be South Africa writ large. We've even allowed the culture destroyers to redefine our nation, so its new meaning has nothing to do with race or kinship, and in fact stands opposed to racial integrity and love of one's own. Loyalty to what America has become is, for all practical purposes, disloyalty to your own people. The mostly Jewish masters of the media have denigrated loyalty to one's race, at least if you're white, as racism, and made it into a taboo so strong that many of us are filled with fear at the thought of being so labeled. So for millions of white Americans, that instinct to group loyalty has no natural outlet. And the media masters and many opportunists of the business world are happy to provide us with substitutes. I'm sure you've seen the Chevy pickup trucks with anti-Ford cartoons or slogans on them, and the converse. Loyalty to an automobile brand. Loyalty to a rock band or genre of music is shown by millions of t-shirts and bumper stickers. Loyalty to a political party can approach insane fanaticism. Your president or candidate can do no wrong, even if he violates every single pledge he made to you during the campaign, and the opposition party is always evil incarnate. It's not a matter of what's right or wrong. It's not a matter of what's best for the nation, and it's certainly never, ever a matter of what's best for the race. It's all a matter of which team you're on, and you give your full loyalty to that team, be it Democrat or Republican. It doesn't matter that the positions taken by your team mutate every few years as the political strategists hold their fingers to the winds of mob opinion. It doesn't matter if the two opposing teams are close friends and drinking buddies when the cameras aren't on, or that they almost always hold the same positions on issues important to the Jews, like wars for Israel, mass non-white immigration, and the evils of racism and anti-Semitism. What matters is that your team comes out a winner. That's where your loyalty lies. And the globalist Zionist oligarch Rupert Murdoch loves the fact that so many white Americans give their loyalty to his Fox News channel, which pretends to oppose the oligarchs in a few unimportant but extremely noisy ways. It's not quite so easy to dismiss people who put loyalty to their religion first. Like the South Africans, many white Americans define themselves by their faith. If you woke them up from a sound sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning and abruptly asked them, "What are you?" many would respond, "I'm a Baptist," or "I'm a Catholic," or "I'm a Christian," or the like. Like the Afrikaners, they primarily define themselves by what they believe. But what you believe is, for most of the faithful, largely defined by a priesthood or hierarchy, and we have seen how that hierarchy can be influenced to change its positions on vital issues by 180 degrees in just a few decades. In 1948, the Dutch Reformed Church virtually invented apartheid, and in 1992, it declared apartheid to be a sin. What you believe is changeable. You can change your beliefs, or be influenced to change them, many times in one lifetime. Some of us can change them repeatedly in a single year. The more easily influenced sort of person, the kind who bears the unmistakable stamp of whoever it is he last talked to, can change his beliefs many times in a single day. Even the best of us adjust our beliefs based on our growing apprehension of reality. All brave and honest men stand up for their sincere beliefs, whether they were taught them as a child or acquired them through the hard lessons of life. But giving your primary loyalty to and defining yourself by a belief system leaves you open to manipulation, to error, and even to extinction. What you believe is changeable. What you are, on the other hand, what you actually are, is immutable and potentially eternal. What you actually are is a life form on planet Earth, specifically a particular kind of life form, a member of a human race which is now evolving apart from the other human races. It is in your nature to recognize others of your kind, to choose your mate from among them, and to continue the evolutionary flow of life that is your race, by having white children. It is in your nature and in accord with the very structure of life itself to be loyal to others of your kind and to give and to sacrifice so that future generations of your kind will continue to live on when you are gone.
In the shadow play, acting out your own death, knowing no more. There's the assassin's old group, 10 more lines dancing on the floor. And with cold steel loaded around their bodies, made a move to command.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Hi, Tom Bolton for EaseOff. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation. But today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC. 417-932-6419.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
It is this natural racial loyalty that is the basis of the nation. The word nation itself is derived from the Latin word for birth. A nation is a group of people of common birth, common descent, common race. Rightly understood, the nation is a subset of the race, and by definition must be comprised of one race and one race only. The word patriotism has its root in common with the Latin word for father. To be a patriot is to fight for your fatherland, for your kin who share the same ancestry as you. To be a patriot is to be loyal to your race and nation. That kind of loyalty is natural. If we intend to survive, that kind of loyalty must come before any other loyalty. It is essential. We must have it, or we are done for. If we put loyalty to our political party higher in our scale of values than loyalty to our race, we can be manipulated into a situation where one or the other must be sacrificed, and we will let our race die so we can win the next election. If we put loyalty to a red, white, and blue piece of cloth over loyalty to our race, then we will end up fighting on the wrong side if our enemies stage a coup and take over the government that flies that flag, as they most assuredly have already done. If we put loyalty to a church higher in our scale of values than loyalty to our race, then whenever the interests of our people, of our race, come into conflict with those of the church hierarchy, we will let our race be harmed or even die, so that our church can gain new converts or thrive in a new social climate or whatever the church leadership decides is necessary. We in the National Alliance are different. We don't just want to continue American life as it is, but with some white rights added to the mix. No, we know that won't work. We don't just want, as the better kind of conservatives do, to restore the Constitution and return to the laws of the founders, because we know that's not enough to do the job. The founders in the first American Congress, some of the same men who framed the Constitution, did create the Naturalization Act of 1790, which stated that only those of European descent could become citizens. That act, and the innumerable laws of the various states banning racial mixture and the like, and the voluminous correspondence of the men who wrote those laws, and the membership of many of them in the American Colonization Society, the purpose of which was to repatriate blacks to the continent of Africa, show beyond any doubt that the founders intended for America to be a white nation. But all of those good intentions and all of those laws were not enough to prevent the subversion of our republic and its conversion into a multiracial democracy. The National Alliance stands for a new society, organized on the basis of racial loyalty as its first and unchangeable value. A new constitution with the eternal racial integrity and racial progress of our people as its very reason for being. A new educational system which has the encouragement and augmentation of the natural racial loyalty of our young people as its first principle. A new government which is comprised of and answerable to our people alone, and a large, self-sustaining territory exclusively for our people and for no one else. Without these basic requirements, we are doomed as a race and nation. They are non-negotiable, and they are non-negotiable because they are essential. If you agree that we must stand together, no matter what the odds, to achieve our goal of a new white nation, to let nothing stand in our way or discourage us, and to give our highest loyalty to our race and our new nation in the making, then I ask you to join your efforts to ours today.
You just heard American Dissident Voices, broadcast of the 8th of October, 2022, with orator Kevin Alfred Strom. You are listening to Beyond the Official Narrative, and we'll return for the bottom of the hour with some live commentary with my live guest. Stick around, folks.
See the danger, always danger, endless talking, life rebuilt.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
OPEC Plus is expected to announce a cut in oil production today. I'm Peter Serafin with today's Liberty Minute. The oil producers cartel of OPEC Plus is meeting today and is expected to announce the largest cut in oil production since the beginning of the COVID pandemic. Some are forecasting a cut of 1 million barrels a day. That would obviously raise the price of oil and in turn the cost of gasoline. And clearly, a steep increase in gas prices this close to election time would be a disaster for the Democrats. So the Biden administration has launched a full-scale pressure campaign hoping to stop the production reduction. Remember when America was energy independent and a net exporter of energy? Ah, the good old days. If only Biden had not attacked American oil producers, stopped pipelines, and ended leases, and drained the nation's strategic oil reserves. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem, Parabellum.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Are live, folks. Good afternoon and welcome to the bottom of the hour here on Beyond the Official Narrative. And this is Tuesday, October 11, 2022. I'm your host, Richard Carey, right here on RBN. You did hear National Alliance head orator Kevin Alfred Strom. I should clarify, that was actually a classic rebroadcast that he played just this October 8th, 2022. And you can find that at National Vanguard. I have a live guest here with us. And no, it's not that orator, but it is a great advocate of the National Alliance. One Paul in California. Welcome, Paul.
Good morning, Richard. Glad to join you, and I'm happy to see that you took my suggestion to play that recording, which I actually heard for the first time yesterday, and I was quite inspired by it because I feel that more than anything I've heard recently, it not only resonates with me, but it speaks for me. A lot of my thoughts and things I've said over the years have been formed by William Pierce and by Kevin Alfred Strom, and I consider them to be, in many ways, some of the best spokesmen for our nation and our race, and I am often quite inspired by what I hear and then what I also read over at National Vanguard.
Yes, no, I mean, I had been looking into Jewish power for quite a lot of years, and World War revisionism, you know, Third Reich revisionism included, of course. And yet, you know, it's really been only recently that I've even been able to feel okay with, you know, discussing some of these things on air. It's so taboo to talk about a form of statehood, you know, that is racial anymore. I mean, that it's considered the ultimate evil, you know, ethnic nationalist nation states for white people. But it is for white people that it's demonized, not others. And that's the most important clue for those who are just catching up. Isn't that right, Paul?
Well, absolutely. And I've always been pretty clear on this idea. I think that people like Pierce and Kevin Alfred Strom and others have only crystallized it for me. I think that naturally inside of us, we are all sort of this way. I've listened to that particular broadcast now twice. And as a matter of fact, last night before falling asleep, I also listened to a couple of hours of William Pierce on the National Alliance radio stream. So I just renewed again the simplicity and the clarity of this thought, because as he makes clear, and I think there's no title that I know of, but I think we should title that, what we are is immutable. Everything else changes, such as what we think and believe, but what we are and who we are is immutable, in that we cannot change it, which of course brings to the level of absurdity all these other claims that we're now being told to honor, such as, well, I'm a woman, not a man, okay, first and foremost among them, okay, or that these Asians that come over here that don't speak a lick of English and they're only coming over here to get on the welfare rolls because they've been told to do so by their relatives, they're the new Americans. Or an African that has never been here before and doesn't know anything about us or our history is now a new American, and let's put him in some small town in America and pay for his housing and his food and his education and his medical care, because, by gosh, we're a nation of immigrants. There couldn't be a more obvious Jewish lie than these sorts of things, and they can't be any more clear by such a speech that Kevin Alfred Strom did, because as he discusses, and I encourage any and all listeners to listen to this again and to spread it, it doesn't make any sense to do anything other than what it is he suggests, and it doesn't make any sense, in my opinion, to think in another way than what he talks about. And that includes any talk of the so-called Constitution or a political party or anything else along those lines.
And when you look at the amount of people, it's true what is mentioned about people constantly changing what they believe in. And a lot of the role models in our society have a lot to do with that. Now, certainly, it's exaggerated for the youth who are still coping with finding their own identity. You know, don't have the knowledge and wisdom which comes with it. Well, experience is required as well, really, to feel confident. And most people these days never really reach that point. It's interesting when we hear of the comparison of sports, but then of religion, you know, in the South African saga, in that tale. Just to take a glimpse of the parallels we've already been enduring. As he said, no one had to worry about it with the demographics of the 1940s, the 1950s, the 1960s even, Paul.
Right. Well, we can all pretty see what is quickly approaching, and that's always the problem, is what I call the cushion and the comfort of the moment, okay, so that most of us are not in any so-called imminent danger, and so therefore we tend to focus mainly on what is our individual status. And, of course, there's a complete and total a disaster waiting for all of us if things deteriorate to what our rulers and our masters would desire for us, which is to become a despised minority. It's not just becoming a minority, but it's clear from the press we are to become a despised minority that has been responsible for all sorts of past ills. And even though individually we were never involved, they want us to feel individual guilt for some collective sins of the past. But the fact of the matter is that none of us have done anything to deserve this, and we should not be shy about asserting our own claims and our own rights, which historically have been enforced by our ancestors, by our forefathers. I think that our forefathers, the so-called founding fathers, the pioneers, all the people that built and made this country, this civilization that everybody wants to come to, I think that they would want us to stand firm and to assert our rights, that this is our territory, it's not your territory. And if we say you should go home, then that's where you're going to go by hook or crook. That's always been the way I feel. I don't need to offer anybody explanations about why it is I think and feel the way I do. And this so-called white supremacy, in my mind, it's just, it's ridiculous. And I think that the notion that we shouldn't be, supreme in our own nation is absurd. Because and if we are not supreme, and we're not right now, we know who is, and it isn't us, then obviously we're going to get ruled and governed by others that might not have our best interest in mind, and we all can clearly see now that our rulers and governors that are taking advantage of the complete lack of any supremacy on our part have nothing but the most malevolent intent for our basic social condition, our medical health, and our political and actual racial future. So, again, I just thought that clip, minus perhaps the sports analogy is interesting. It's just a tool that they used. That speech could have been longer or it could have been shorter, and you could have used some other different examples. But I think it serves the purpose to illustrate what it is we're facing and how it is we should think about it.
That lecture stresses a new form of government, a new ruling system for a nation state, which is racial by definition, in the way that it is designed, intrinsic to its design. And I think it is nonetheless, very logical, and yet leaves room for other approaches from others, such as we have cosmotheism, affiliated with National Alliance, and that embraces science and race as a center of a new spirituality. I also know, though, that in the former organization of the American Nazi Party and the attempt at getting away from some of the traps of these political targeting groups, we have ultimately instead of National Socialist White Workers Party, the New Order, of Martin Kerr heading it. And that is an approach that takes away politics. It's focusing on spirituality and race. And he thinks that organization sees that as a winning solution. It's healthy to have both approaches out there, but I suppose I can see how cosmotheism is just a little more. Go ahead.
I don't to help you out here and bring further clarity to this topic. I don't think it's important at all at this point about any sort of philosophy, be it political or religious or spiritual or otherwise. It's far more important what we do, okay, than it is what we think anymore. I think that the time for too much thinking and philosophizing is long past. We are indeed facing existential, threats, real physical threats in this physical realm which we all exist in. I mean, it's really that simple. I mean, when you take a look at what just took place, right, the so-called pandemic and everything that they attempted to do, sure, many of those programs that they wanted to implement were psychological in nature, but they're all, in the end, designed for our physical undoing, such as sticking a needle in our arm and injecting us with poison, among other things. So, it's interesting to discuss such things as cosmotheism, and I'm not opposed to any of that. But, as the talk made clear, who we are, what we are, biological reality, that's immutable. And that's what we need to, in my opinion, we need to honor. I say to people that I know all the time, and there's a friend of mine, it probably annoys him to no end, but I tell him all the time that he needs to, honor who he is, which is a white man, okay, to live in such a way and to work in such a way and to do such things that would bring honor to the genetic heritage that he was gifted through no doing of his own. You know, all of us that are, white people have been gifted with a genetic heritage. And that's why I'm so disgusted by the way a lot of people think, act, and or the way they would mix their own blood with other races just because they happen to be available. You know, like, in other words, somebody we live next door to, go to school with, go to work with, and, oh, you know, you're a suitable mate. Doesn't matter that you're not white. Okay, you're a person just like me. This is the kind of Jewish poison that we've all been subjected to.
Mm-hmm. And so you're saying, yeah, there's plenty of time for further philosophizing, but we need to, I mean, but then, you know, of course, there are not political solutions, and on the air, we're not in a position to be encouraging otherwise. We're in a position to get people thinking about the options which truly exist and how much history may not repeat, but certainly does rhyme. There are clearly, though, a lot of things at play. There's asymmetrical warfare on the nation and in Europe as well. I think all the immigration, extreme anti-white and gender politics is a way to demoralize, confuse, keep people preoccupied, but also distract them. You know, I mean, even the war, of course, is a distraction.
Correct.
From the economy. Yeah.
Preoccupied with unimportant issues that in many ways are just complete, total distractions. And, you know, people make mention of the Constitution. Well, there are provisions in the Constitution, and I believe Article 1, Section 8, a friend of mine is always telling me these sorts of things. You know, it allows us to do what it is that we need to do to change our government. And there's some great speeches on there on National Alliance, the radio stream, by both William Pierce and Kevin Alfred Strom, talking about the fact that what is a natural leader? Okay, in other words, these people that are claiming to be our rulers in our government, right? What is their actual duty towards us? And when they no longer, act in such a way that would protect or benefit us, then what is our duty? What is it that we need to do, and what is it that we need to think about? And so it's clear enough that, you know, everybody that's ever heard you and I and other people talk about these things, we all know that our rulers are also our owners, and they own all the media, they own all the computer systems. You know, many of them develop the very software that they're using on for the electronic voting. They own the banking system. So there is no, there's no workaround of using the system that's currently in place to prevail, not just to advocate for our interests, but to prevail, because our goal should only be one thing. If we're going to have a goal, there's only one goal to have, and that's to win, to prevail. Okay, I mean victory. If we're not going to have that goal in mind, I don't know about you, but I can't stand the idea of some sort of a percentage representation in a parliamentary government, or to have some supposed seat at the table where all the Jewish systems are still in place that will continue to act against us. So the die is cast, in my opinion, and it's been cast for a long time, and we just have to get our thinking right. And I just thought that clip did, for 20 or so minutes, did as much as possible to show people what the proper way to think is. And for some, it might be hardcore. For me, it's just right. In many ways, not even maybe hardcore enough, if that's even possible.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the, options which remain out there, I mean, I found it interesting how we had this Kanye West so much in the media lately. You know, he had these White Lives Matter shirts he was modeling with Candace Owens, like on the back of the shirts, white on black or black on white shirts for his his line, well, I guess he has a line of clothing and shoes and everything, ridiculous markups, like $20 shoes made in Asia, sold for like hundreds of dollars. Just, you know, still someone who feels like they made it on their own, though. But, you know, suddenly seeing the limits, you know, even with his black equity card in the Hollywood. So, I mean, we had, I guess, pushback from, I can only assume, you know, a Jewish power structure of these media Mongols about the White Lives Matter thing. Then Kanye, well, he was on Tucker talking about this as well. So it got a lot of press. That was not appreciated by the anti-white establishment. Kanye then starts talking about Jewish power and gets canceled instantly. It turns out he's already most likely losing his, you know, corporate deals for products and the social media, which is a sign of what's left to come. But I mean, it's, yeah, it was a huge markup. Like, I mean, the shoes.
Well, we can forget about what kind of markup his shoes have. Okay.
Right.
So that's really not the point.
Yeah. I mean, but I mean, it's already like Instagram and Twitter ban for Kanye. And he's like, I don't know how surprised he is. He thought that he could get away with it because of his blackness.
I have no idea what this is. In other words, whether it's some kind of a circus show, whether it's an anomaly, so on. But when somebody like Tucker Carlson, who's an obvious, what word would you like to apply? A shill, a gatekeeper? When somebody like Tucker Carlson can actually be explicitly pro-white and explicitly anti-Jewish rule or Jewish criminal syndicate, then we can take this kind of stuff seriously, similar to Trump or to any political leader such as Ron DeSantis. When they are explicitly pro-white, okay, and speak out explicitly against Jewish power, then we can take politics seriously. But when you hear some of the talks that Kevin Alfred Strom did about Trump, then you would see it very clearly. And I'm sure that William Pierce, were he still alive, would have done some of the same sort of talks and lectures about Trump and about this sort of shenanigans that's taking place in the Jewish media. Let Tucker Carlson seriously talk about white genocide and seriously talk about the Jewish engineering behind it. Then we can pay attention to what Kanye West really, you know, has to say. I mean, goody, we have a black man that's on our side. Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
It's interesting for non-whites to even see how much the Jewish establishment will retaliate. New York Post is referring to the story like this. Okay, insiders are in no doubt that his recent headline-grabbing behavior is the result of a mental break, and they believe it's the most serious such episode that the rapper has suffered. We're told that Watch the Throne star is barely sleeping, which is an issue that reportedly contributed to his hospitalization in 2016. And so then the article says this 100% chance that every deal he's had with major companies is now over forever. Even if he walks this stuff back, he's not going to get anything for doing so. You can't just go out there and say that Jews are powerful and target people who question their agenda for harassment. And Kanye said exactly that. I guess this is on that, because I mentioned Twitter and Instagram, him getting shut down. I think this is his maybe Instagram account. And he posts this. He posts, "I'm a bit sleepy tonight, but when I wake up, I'm going DEFCON 3 on all capital letters, Jewish people." And then he says, "The funny thing is, I actually can't be anti-Semitic because black people are actually Jew also. You guys have toyed with me and tried to blackball anyone who ever opposes your agenda." Paul, your comments.
Well, like I said, it's all very interesting. And if it's real and, you know, he really is authentic in what he says and feels, well, okay, fine, welcome. I mean, well, I'm not against being supported by those of another race, right? But I think that we can clearly see this is a lot of theater. And in many cases, it's a form of distraction, you know? Mm-hmm. In other words, okay, a black person, supports us. Oh, Mexicans and Latinos support Trump. You know, look, the Mexicans and Latinos are going to overrun us by large numbers if we allow this trend to continue. In my opinion, you know, we have a lot of problems that we can turn our attention to, but chief among them is, do we want to become like a Central or South American country or a Mexican country? And the fact of the matter is the answer should be a resounding no. And so, and again, I just went off on a tangent there, but you get the point.
Yes, indeed. Let's try to fit in a caller before the bottom of the show here. Laura in Michigan. Hey, welcome, Laura. Hey, what are your thoughts today?
I just want to give you a website, donoharm.com. It's about how the nursing schools and the medical schools are teaching critical race theory, that in the future, doctors or whoever will treat you as to, they'll look at you and say, well, this guy's probably a white supremacist, or this guy's probably a Trump supporter, and they'll decide whether they treat you or not. You want to look in that, at that website.
I heard about that, Laura. Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. Okay, that's all I wanted to tell you guys.
And what did you think of that that clip, Laura, of we played earlier?
Well, I got to tell you, I've been a white supporter since I was 2 years old, since my father was killed by a black man.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
I grew up, my father came home from Korea and was working at Ford Rouge plant. And while they were standing in a line to punch out, a guy stabbed him to death. So,
oh my God! My mother, I'm so sorry to hear this.
We moved to a rural area in Michigan, and my mom, I'll tell you, my sister tried to bring home a Stevie Wonder album. She almost got thrown out of the house. We had nothing to do with anybody black ever again. So,
well, thank you for sharing.
It changes your life, you know, when your dad is killed. My mother remarried, yes. Stepdad, but all my sisters and brothers are half brothers and sisters, you know.
Well, I'm very sorry to hear that. Thank you for sharing that. And Paul, I think you were trying to express the same to Laura.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Laura. And there's so many stories that, you know, we could talk on another show about this. But yeah, just having these people here is a danger in so many ways, and not the least of which is the fact that many of them are taking jobs that a white man could use to support his family. And I know a friend right now who lost his brother. They were all in their 20s, and he lost his brother because an illegal Mexican stabbed him when he came out and caught him trying to steal from his truck. Okay, this is a great-looking young white man who is now gone from this earth for many decades now because he got stabbed to death by an illegal racial alien. So this is no light matter, and I appreciate you having this show, Richard. You're a brave man.
Well, thank you, Paul. Thank you for being here and contributing to all of this information. And Laura, thank you again for that call. I am really sorry, but thank you for sharing that. Folks, please support the station to continue all of this uncensored content, and we will speak again soon. Transcend the construct. Regards.
Did you know that essential oils have had a multitude of natural health and skin uses in history, but have been somewhat forgotten by recent civilization? Susanna's Secret offers 100% pure natural oils at prices you can actually afford. Do you have a house or office with a musty smell or mold? Studies have shown that essential oils like the one in our Thief and Robbers blend will kill or inhibit mold, viruses, bacteria, and fungus. Just diffuse with it, and you will see the long-lasting effects that even synthetic chemicals don't achieve. Purifica, another one of our products used to clean and freshen your house or give a natural scent when drying laundry. For that special lady, we offer a ginger argan oil in a beautiful cosmetic bottle or a pure argan oil, a natural acne-fighting product. Check us out at SusannaSecret.com. That's SusannaSecret.com. SusannaSecret.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.